Own an Airstream? Check out our book, Restoring a Dream, available on Amazon.com.
Have a specific episode you want to hear? No problem. Head on over to thevap.locals.com. You can listen to any episode, anytime. Stream it directly to your phone or on a computer. You can also pick from one of our many curated playlists to hear specific topics. So head on over to thevap.locals.com. For Friday, April 4th, 2014, you're listening to The VAP, episode 206, Spring for Airstreams.
With 2 tons of aluminum hitched to his bumper, cruising down the internet superhighway, The VAP is streaming right to your ears. Vintage Airstream Podcast. And now your host for the Vintage Airstream Podcast, Tim Shepard.
Living in aluminum. Living in aluminum. Living in aluminum. Living in aluminum. Living in aluminum.
Here we are back again, episode 206. I'm your host, Tim Shepard, and I have with me tonight Colin Hyde. Welcome, Colin.
Good day, everybody. Coming to you again from beautiful spring-like Peru, where we're finally getting some warm weather, although this past weekend we got snow as the last sort of April Fool's dump, I guess, and then things have been starting to melt like crazy.
Nice, nice. We actually had tornado warnings last weekend.
Tornado.
Yeah, we did. Up in Sacramento, they actually had pictures of it on the local news.
So not only does it rain in California, you get tornadoes too.
Yeah, apparently. big enough to make the news. It was a warning for, I think, 3 hours in Sacramento.
Wow. I hear you get earthquakes as well.
Yeah, we had that a couple nights ago. 6.2 or something. Yeah, Southern California. Didn't feel nothing here, but yeah, crazy, wild and wacky place, man.
Do you get them up there at all?
Yeah, we get them up here toward the Bay Area, and then we'll feel it here. Only a couple in the past 20 years or something I can remember.
Now, if you're in your trailer, would you feel it?
Well, if I put my supports down, I guess I would.
Oh, so if the tires were just kind of shaking there, it probably wouldn't be an issue.
Not with my nice new axles.
There you go. Well, and your nice new tires.
That's right. That's right. But, yeah, we've had some really torrential downpours here the last few days, which is nice because I was able to go out and check the trailer. As you know, from the last show, I redid the air conditioning because it was leaking, and nice and dry, just the way I like it.
Well, you were very, very fortunate because, you know, yesterday we had water pouring in the front door of my shop. And I was like, what on earth? It's a driveway out there. And the roof was melting off, coming down the downspout, and flooded around the side of the building and across the front and started flowing through underneath the front door and into my office and everything else. And fortunately, my landlord is a construction company, so they came zooming up with loaders and all kinds of things and dug all the snowbanks away to make things flow. But it was a little disconcerting for a while.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not good. You don't need to have it raining inside.
No. Yeah. No, it was... but, yeah.
Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. But
it is.
It goes from... spring to winter to spring back to winter. It's crazy. Like today was sunny and 70. So, what are you going to do?
We had 52 today, believe it or not.
Oh, that's good. That's
and
good.
Snow on Saturday night. So, yep. Go figure.
Yep. Let's see. We got a couple questions here. I think we'll hit this one. This is from Facebook. And, it's from Joseph Donaldson. He says, howdy, guys. I hear you talking about rear end separation on longer Airstreams. I have a 75-31 foot and was wondering about rear end separation. And where can I get new axles? Thanks for your time and your help.
Outrider Joe. I guess that's his nickname. Okay, axles. Where can he get axles? We know this one.
Well, there's many places, but and I am one of them. But what I can tell you is that for your trailer, Axis is the company that I represent, but they're the only ones that have axles that actually bolt right into your trailer with no modifications whatsoever. They the axles are built with Henschen-type mounting brackets on them, because several years ago, Axis purchased Henschen, so they've certainly got all the intellectual property designs and parts available for to make it fit perfectly. So that's what we've been doing on all the ones post post 68.
Okay, well, that's good. So, Colin, what's your email address? Or which?
ColinHydeAirstream@gmail.com.
There you go. Now, rear end separation is something we talk about a lot. We hear about it a lot, and it seems to be focused around the 70s trailers, like Outrider Joe's talking about, the longer ones. But what is rear end separation? How do you spot this in the first place?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's centered around 70s. That's what the typical concern is, because they say, oh, they're the first ones of gray tanks, therefore it, because they had too much weight in the back that causes separation. I don't believe that at all, because there's been rear end separation on 60s and 50s era trailers, and certainly the newer ones. Basically, what it all boils down to is that the floor ends up rotting out in the back end, and that's due to the fact there's no real flashing to take the water away from the end grain of the floor that's just behind the trim around the bottom of the wall. And so water gets in there, it rots it out, bolts rust out, cross members rust out, and you end up with the chassis separating from the body. Now, obviously, by hanging bicycle racks and spare tires and giant battery boxes and things like that off the back, that causes greater problems. But that's really not the initial cause. Initial cause really due to the rot issues associated with that era. Now, the 70s era, I think they got the biggest blot on them, because the body shape changed in 69, and the water would tend to run back towards the floor end grain and behind that trim and cause the failure. Certainly it happened on the earlier ones, but there is a little bit more metal covering the end grain, so it wasn't as it didn't happen as soon, put it that way.
So the design, if you have subfloor in the back of the trailer that's dry rotting out or damaged or coming apart from the frame, you have rear end separation. But the 70s ones, they are made perhaps more prone to it because of the way the body doesn't protect the subfloor.
Correct. And you know, you can certainly do things. We add flashing in there when we redo them, and certainly to basically channel the water away from the floor area and out into the bumper trunk or across the top of the bumper trunk. Plus, you know, when we redo floors, we've got epoxy saturation all around that perimeter area, so you've got another line of defense.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people would just run a bead of Volcom or something across that trim molding, and that's not really going to do much, is it?
Well, you know, that's like having a big knife gash and somebody puts a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if you removed it and then put a good bead of Volcom underneath it and then pushed it back on, you'd be probably a little bit better off.
Oh, certainly. If it can be sealed, that's great. The problem is, though, that the damage is already there. you know, it's been, these trailers are 30, 40 years old now. So it doesn't take that long for them to rot out. So typically the damage is three quarters there or fully there. And, you know, by adding some Vulcan in behind there, you still got the problem. You know, I've always told everybody, you know, on the phone or whatnot, just get somebody to stand on the bumper and get down on your hands and knees and look at the joint where the chassis comes out the back of the trailer and where the body comes down and meets it. And get the person to jump up and down on the bumper and just watch that joint. And the body and the chassis better go up and down in absolute perfect unison. If they're sort of separating and then coming back and separating and coming back, you've got a problem going on there. Could be, you know, a small part of rot, but more than likely it's much bigger because the... There's just not a lot holding it all together back there.
Yeah, I guess think of it as like a sandwich. Like the chassis frame is the bread, and the aluminum shell is the other bread, and the subfloor is the bologna.
Exactly. And you know what? Old bologna, it gets pretty stinky.
That's right. That's right. So 70s may be more prone, but more than likely the age of these things are getting wet, maybe even between the seams of the shell and water rolling down inside or in any means behind running lights or something and getting water in there. So it's very common for the rear end subfloor and the cross member, the rear cross member especially, to be rusted through.
Yeah, and that's you know, in all the years I've been doing this, that's the most common place of rotting out. Absolutely the most common place. The next most common is near the door. And then after that, it comes to the front. But, yeah, the back end is always the issue. The other thing is, you know, when you're redoing this, more than likely when it's that badly separated, your rear cross member, or sometimes they only have a small inverted C or something like that, or a piece of angle. Really, we cut that out completely or whatever remains, and we build a full cross member in the to close off the bumper trunk from the belly pan cavity, and that keeps the mice and squirrels and whatnot out of there as well. And then when we start redoing the black tank dump valve assembly, we redesign that so it comes out just below on the bottom of the belly pan, just ahead of the bumper trunk, instead of sort of going out into the bumper trunk. And you know, it's a little bit more difficult to connect up your stinky slinky, but really not that big an effort. And certainly, you're not giving away much considering what you're gaining in terms of keeping the vermin out of there.
Yeah. So another issue that comes up with these 70s trailers, these especially the long ones, is that frame issue, right? Where the frame actually bends.
Yeah, well, once the separation starts, excuse me, it's just like a zipper. The it rots out in the back and it starts working its way around the rear corners. And the outriggers don't go out very far into the corner. They don't go all the way to the edge of the corner like most people would think. So there's basically just body and floor there. And typically there's just a couple screws and maybe one bolt or something in the corner. Really not much. We end up putting elevator bolts all the way around to make sure the floor and is being used as a structural member at that point to transfer loads from the skin and C-channel across to the main rail and to the outriggers. But it will start unbolting, unzipping. Bolts will pull through the C-channel, break, rust away, all the way forward. So eventually, you know, we've seen them where they fail virtually up to the wheel well.
Wow. And I know there was a thought that was done on the 70s models because of adding gray tanks and not changing the frames and all that kind of stuff. And then they came out with some kind of factory patch to fix the frame. But it all really has come around back full circle to the structural integrity of the monocoque design, right? Which all this talked about.
You know, in that era as well, they've sort of had, in my view, a design flaw where the axle mounting plate that's welded to the side of the frame rails, it adds obviously quite a bit of structure right in that area, and it projects down, you know, 6 inches or so from the bottom of the frame. And then right at the back of the trailer, they added another piece of angle iron on the bottom of the frame in order to make that frame a little bit deeper to put in a black tank and or a gray tank, depending on the year. But what they should have done is really had that piece of angle extend all the way forward to the axle mounting plate. That would have made that frame a lot stiffer, because typically where the hinge point is right at the end of the axle mounting plate, just before it gets onto that other piece of angle iron, because you've got a narrower section of frame there that's, you know, certainly the weakest point. And with the separation going on in the back, the body doing one thing, bouncing up and down as they drive, and then, of course, with a full black tank or a full gray tank, all it does is compound the problem. And, you know, certainly have a whole bathroom back there, other, you know, batteries on some occasions. It just compounds the issue, and literally you have frames that bend there, and then you have main rails that rust out along there as well due to all the stuff opening up and water getting in. We've actually, many times, we've replaced, you know, the back 8 feet of main frame rail.
Wow. I think I mentioned several times on the show how I was worried about welding my new axles onto that original 60 frame because of just, you know, being thin in places, because you can't tell from the outside. And
right.
So we welded on, spot welded on two angle irons the full distance of the dual axle wheel well opening to add support. But yeah, it can get tricky. So let me ask you this. Let's say you were going to look for a 31 foot 70s trailer for yourself that you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
How would you investigate it before you bought it?
Well, I would assume the worst right off the bat, because 99% of them, that problem is there. And if somebody says it's been fixed, you want to know, okay, show me exactly how it's been fixed. Show me pictures, make sketches, drawings, whatever, how it's been done. Because there's a lot of sort of backyard fudge repairs that, you know, people are, you know, well-meaning, I guess, but don't really understand it and don't really want to take it all apart in order to do the job right. And the easiest thing, though, is just literally get on the bumper and jump up and down and see what you're up against. Sometimes it's really badly rotted on one side, and one side, you know, opens and closes, but the opposite side doesn't at all. It's really kind of strange. But I would just assume, though, that that is a problem, because more than likely it is.
And what if somebody told you that the factory frame repair was done? How would you look for that?
Well, it's just a plate that goes on the outside of the frame rail, and it's bolted on. So you'd look underneath, just behind the axle mounting plate, and it's a doubler plate, and they've drilled through the frame and added bolts to it. It's more of a Band-Aid as far as I'm concerned as well, because really you've got the bigger problem with, of course, the rot and separation in the back. It certainly makes the frame better. There's no question. But if the floor hadn't rotted out in the back, that frame reinforcement wouldn't be necessary at all, especially if they just did a piece of angle iron that was, you know, 6 inches longer than what they put on.
Wow. It's funny how, you know, years and years of use really kind of points these things out, because I'm sure, you know, if they would have known, they would have just done it then, but It takes, you know, 30 years on the road for these things to pop up sometimes. Sometimes a lot less, though.
Well, I mean, they've been putting on that reinforcement plate for quite a few years. But people blame it on, well, it's the gray tanks. I think that was an easy thing to point your finger at.
Yeah.
That's really not the – I don't believe it's the cause because – You know, there's many trailers that travel around with empty gray tanks their whole life, empty black tanks, and they still got frame separation.
Yeah, I try to run mine empty before I head down the road. I'm just saying, these things, like, if they could have just added a little more support, they could have done it. But sometimes they don't reveal themselves for years and years, but... sometimes, like even on some of the newer trailers, they have problems fairly soon. Like, on one of the models there, I think the bunkhouse model, the front where there's a hatch on the front of the trailer, isn't the some cases where that is ripping on the corners of the door?
Yeah, well, the ones that had the square access hatch up front. I think that's a crazy design myself, having a hatch there at all, because that's, you know, they're missing the hold down plate up front, which all Airstreams are from basically 81 and up, or 82 and up, somewhere around there. Certainly early 80s. So I guess they figured, well, we can also just punch a hole in the front of it, but it doesn't work. Certainly for some people it does, but it really depends on how the trailer's used, how heavily it's hitched up, in terms of bars and stuff, and, you know, how long and where they go with it, what sort of roads, and how many miles they put on it. Because certainly some have survived, there's no question. But at the same time, you know, these trailers, there's certainly planned obsolescence built into them, there's no question. Yeah. And I'm not saying that wasn't the case years ago. It's just that years ago, there's many aspects of it that caused them to survive 50 years and still be rebuildable. Whereas the newer ones, there's a bunch of factors there that are, you know, the obsolescence is all coming together at the same time, as opposed to one really good aspect of the structure that's surviving and the rest of it going south.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't get into this too much, but, you know, the way the vintage ones were built were literally, they were built, the shells were built all at the same time where, you know, the aluminum went over the hoops that just supported the shape. Because I watched the old videos, that's what they told you. The hoops were there just to support the shape, but the outclad aluminum went, you know, full pieces all the way around the trailer, building, you know, the walls and the roof and all interconnected one piece. Where now, it's actually what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pieces that are prefabbed and then assembled into a trailer. Isn't that right?
Yeah, there's 2 end caps. There's walls and a roof.
Yeah, so
it's a floor, but
it's not like it's, you know, put together all together at once. These are like individual pieces brought together and riveted together to form the Airstream. It's totally different than it was on the vintage units.
Yeah, and, you know, the manufacturing processes, though, have changed on everything over the years. It's not only Airstream.
Oh, yeah.
So it's... You know, I don't want to point a finger at all because it's, you know, there are certainly some benefits to their approach as well. Perhaps if they were building them in the similar construction technique, they may be priced way out of everybody's pocketbook, you know, so yeah. And then they wouldn't survive. So
that's true. That's true. Okay, well, thanks, Joseph, for the Outrider Joe for the email there.
Yeah, and
the Facebook.
Give me a call or email me, and I can set you up with some axles.
Yeah, there you go. Didn't mean to go wander too far off, but we have a way of doing that.
We do.
Let's see. The next question's from I believe Bill Chitty. And he contacted us from our website, thevap.com. That's where we do the show notes. And there's a contact us page there. You can also email us at questions@thevap.com or call us at 707-533-4VAP and leave us a voicemail message. And so Bill writes, "Hey guys, for many of us, spring is the start of Airstream season. Can you discuss how to get your trailer out of storage and ready to camp again?" So thanks for that, Bill. I thought we'd talk about, let's talk about before we put it in storage, so like back in the winter time. And winter for you is a lot different than me.
Yeah, like you don't even winterize, do you? Do you even like blow the pipes out or do anything like that?
I don't do anything. No, no. It, I mean, it rarely gets below 32, and when it does, it, I guess, I don't think it was last year. It was the year before last. It got to about 28 for about 3 or 4 nights in a row, and I kind of got a little bit worried, but no, I don't ever blow them out or antifreeze or nothing.
Well, then, if it stays so warm, are you out using it year-round? Or do you call that winter and we don't camp in the winter?
No, we don't. We kind of call it wimpy. Winter. And, you know, with the kids in school and all that. Lots of excuses not to go. You know how that is.
Yeah. I kind of understand, but I've never, well, I sort of, I guess I have lived that, but not necessarily with the trailer available to me. But I would have thought, you know, you'd want to use as much as possible if you could, but I guess it literally is a seasonal thing for you. The season might be much longer than us, but it's still, there's a winterizing, well, not winterizing, but at least a stopping of the usage of it for a certain period of time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Over the winter. Well, certainly in our neck of the woods, we have a thing called snow and freezing and frost. So you have to take quite a few precautions, you know, blowing out pipes, adding antifreeze to pipes if that's your direction. We typically just blow them out. Definitely drain hot water heaters, drain water tanks, drain everything, including the traps. I literally blow the traps out, then I add antifreeze to the trap just in case. I've never put antifreeze in the pipes, though. I'm not really interested, and I know they say it's safe, but I don't want to put a foreign substance in my potable water. So I just rely on blowing them out, and that's worked well for me. But the other thing that we got to worry about, especially this past winter in, well, pretty much all of the country, including Atlanta, which was amazing. I got like major snow dumps, and I've had a few clients over the years send me pictures of their trailers that got crushed due to snow loads. And this can happen on a complete trailer, but certainly project trailers are especially susceptible. Especially if you don't set up some kind of supports inside the skin. If you've got the trailer gutted and, you know, even if it's just all the cabinetry and out, is out and you've got the inner and outer skins are there, you really need to have some kind of supports inside. It can be, you know, 2x4s with a T arrangement going up onto the ceiling that just gets pressed into position to help support the roof load. Especially if you're not going to be near the trailer. You know, the trailer's outside my shop. We watch all the time for how snow is going, and we've got a snow rake, and we'll get up and pull snow off as things start to build up, even though they're generally not sitting out there gutted. There certainly are some trailers like that, and we're especially prudent about that. But this... you know, you can be spending a bazillion hours and a lot of dollars redoing your trailer and decide to, you know, it's too cold to work on it in the winter and you're not quite at a point yet where you could put heat in it and, you know, you're working on cabinetry inside or something inside your house and you sort of forget about the body of the trailer out there. But it can look perfect, you know, this beautiful, idyllic picture of your trailer with snow on the top of it, and literally the next day it can be caved in, and your dreams are quashed.
Wow. I mean, never thought about that, but yeah, I guess there's nothing really inside support. So you're saying just the bulkhead cabinetry and stuff is adding more support?
Definitely. It doesn't look like much, but no, it's certainly better than nothing. You know, you've got, you know, it's quarter inch veneered ply, and some support frames for the cabinet doors and stuff. And it makes a big, big difference. Actually, I bought a trailer some years ago from some people at it was in Vermont, near Stowe, Vermont, and they had a especially huge snow dump that winter, and this trailer was sitting with several others up on a hill and on at a friend's farm, and the back portion of the trailers all stayed upright, but the snow load crushed the living room area and the front end cap. So literally, you know, the bulkheads in the galley, they held that up, but just ahead of that, it caved it in.
Oh man!
So something to really think about. You know, we in the Northeast here, we haven't really had to worry about that for the last few years, but this year was especially bad, and you know, it can and does happen. So take care. This winter, actually, I had the trailer in the driveway, and because my barn extension is not finished yet, but next year it'll be inside for the winter. Anyway, we got quite a bit of snow, and then it got really warm, and it kind of melted, and then it froze real quick, so it got this hard crust on the roof, and then we got major snow again, and I was looking at it, and I was like, you know, I can rake it, but really I need some way to let this ice go. So I went and put the furnace on inside and added another auxiliary heater inside there. I think we talked about it a while ago and got it up to 110 degrees or something inside. It was astronomical temperatures. I couldn't believe it. But the sides of the trailer was running water, and it allowed me to pull all of the snow off because it separated from the skin. And but that made me feel so much better because I was a little concerned, you know, that last thing you want is your baby to get crushed.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Now here's a real California question. What does it do to the roof of your homes out there? All that snow.
We don't have, generally, we don't have flat roof houses.
No.
It may be common there, but you go look at traditional northern houses in this part of the country, and they've got pretty steep slopes. Certainly, there's some of them that aren't as steep, but they may have a tin roof on them, or the trusses inside are probably set up significantly stronger and closer together than the construction techniques at where you are.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that when I go up to Tahoe and stuff, that the roofs are really pointy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and we have big concerns of, you know, snow buildup up there and then suddenly letting go. And it can come down. It can kill you.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So watch it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Airstreams, they slide off, too, you know. But, yeah, that's not it's not uncommon. Well, you certainly have to take care.
I had an issue with my trailer here when I was checking it during the rain. I closed the door, and the little rain gutter that's over the door within a door,
mm-hmm.
when the motion of me closing the door caused it to flow, all that water that was in the little gutter, all over my arm.
Oh, that's horrible.
It was just awful.
Yeah, well,
maybe
we
not
have the bigger problems.
Maybe not the same as your snow issues, but yeah, so take care during the winter. Go out there and keep your trailer de-iced and de-snowed. But yeah, I mean, probably you remember last year when I didn't go out and check my trailer too much, I had leaks on my vent gaskets. The vent covers were cracked and allowing water inside, and it actually delaminated some of my cabinetry on my bulkhead.
So, well, that sucks.
Yeah, so I had to work on that. So I do try to, you know, during the whole winter, go out there after a rain, especially a big rain. I go through and I check the front door and the windows, and then that's how I found the air conditioner was leaking. And of course, I check those two vent stacks now and look for leaks. So that's something, even after you're all winterized and ready to do, ready to go, is just go out there and check on it, you know, once every couple of weeks or once a month at least, and just see how it's holding up to the weather. You know, there might be something you need to address before the springtime.
Oh, for sure. But then, now this time of year, you got to start reversing all these things.
Yes, getting it ready, like Bill's asking. How do you get it ready to camp again?
Well, what we do, you know, certainly we camped, you know, and went to Florida this winter. So, you know, we had to re-winterize coming north. So we've got to de-winterize again, which, you know, I'm not prepared to do yet, but it shouldn't be long before we will be able to de-winterize it. But it's really not that big a deal for us because the pipes are all blown out. It's just a little bit of antifreeze in the traps, and certainly when we start running the water, that will all get out of there. The main thing is close off the drain valves that have been left open when we blew everything out. So close all that stuff up. And then what I typically do is add, you know, about, I'm not even sure how much you really need, but we do overkill on this, you know, half a gallon of bleach or something to the water tank. And then pressurize the water tank, or in our particular case, because we've got a pressure system, our city fill is in through the cap of the tank. And basically run all the taps, hot and cold, everywhere until you smell a bleach in the water. And then shut it off and leave it overnight.
Oh, leave it overnight, huh?
Yeah, leave it overnight. And then the next day, you open up all your drains and whatnot again and hook up the city water again and open all your taps and whatnot, and just run everything until you're not smelling bleach on the water coming out.
Okay.
Basically, it's flushing the whole system. So everything's going to be dead. Whatever could have grown in there over the time is definitely dead and flushed out.
Yeah, I have never done that, and I'm going to do that this year because I have seen in my fill tube, which is clear, it's looking a little green in there.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So it makes a difference. Now, years ago when I first got the trailer, I didn't know as much, obviously, as I do now. I went over to our local trailer place and I said, so what do we do here? And the guy told me, well, you know, we got this special little bottle of magic stuff. But he says, what I got to tell you is all we use is bleach. I said, okay, well, bleach is cheap, and I've done that ever since. And, in fact, the first year I got the trailer, the water in there, you know, smelled and tasted horrendously like sulfur. And I thought, this is going to be like that forever. And I did the bleach thing, and it never smelled of sulfur again.
Oh, nice, nice. We always drink bottled water anyway, but still want it to be as clean as possible.
Yeah, we do bottled water as well, but, you know, we still brush our teeth with it, so, and yeah, of course washing all the dishes with it, so it's, there's bound to be some kind of funk that's going to get through, I suppose, so we're trying to be as careful as we can.
So, how do you, if you did use the RV antifreeze, and there is RV antifreeze, we're not talking about automobile antifreeze, right? It's two different
Correct.
Products.
Yeah, very different.
Do not use automotive antifreeze. So if you did put RV antifreeze in your plumbing system and, you know, filled up your pipes, you just drain that out first and then kind of flush it, and then after all that's out, then do this chlorination?
Well, I think what you've got to really do is fill up the your fresh tank, and generally, You know, you don't put antifreeze in the fresh tank. There's usually a bypass valve and a little pump arrangement that allows you to pump the antifreeze from a gallon jug through your system in order to winterize. And of course, there's typically a bypass on the hot water heater as well, so you don't have to fill the hot water heater with 6 or 8 gallons of antifreeze. So what I would do is I put water into the system, into the tank, and then run your pump. And you could even hook on your city fill as well and just turn your taps on and turn your water on coming in. But I would definitely run it through the pump and whatnot as well through from your fresh tank. Once you've got all of that out as much as possible, then I do the bleach thing.
Okay. All right, so leave it in overnight, then the next day drain your tank and fill it up again and flush everything out.
Yep. And that's, you know, when I bought my house some years ago, it had been unoccupied for 6 months or something, and we had to get the well tested. And you know, it tested bad because, you know, it was unoccupied, you know, sort of through the winter and spring, and I guess, you know, it was high water table or whatever, and it had some kind of funk in the well, and we had to shock the well with bleach and leave it for a couple of days and then let the water run and all this sort of stuff. So it works really well because it's been perfect ever since.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a pretty standard deal. Okay, so now we got the water system going. What else do we got to do to get this trailer ready for camping?
Well, at a bare minimum, check the tire pressures.
Yeah.
I would also perhaps, you know, jack each wheel up and adjust the brakes. Make sure they're sort of set up to optimum condition.
Okay, and that's the older drum brakes, right?
Yeah, electric drum brakes. There's a little oval slot in the back of your backing plate that you pull a little rubber cover off. Some of them have a little metal cover, and you can get in there with it's like a screwdriver that looks like a bent screwdriver. And it goes in, and you can sort of lever the little wheel in there that adjusts the shoes outwards. There are automatic adjusters available for trailers. You know, we go either way. Depends on what the client wants. But most of the trailers out there have manual adjusted brakes on them. So really depends how many miles you've put on the trailer, what sort of usage they've had. You know, if it's a lot of mountains and stuff, you know, you're going to get more wear. You may want to think about repacking the bearings depending on, again, how many miles. And you know, dusty climate, that sort of thing you've been towing in.
Now, what about people with hydraulic brakes? Like I had the disc brakes. I've never replaced the fluid in them. I've checked the level, but I haven't drained and replaced the fluid. Is that something you really need to do?
Well, ultimately, yes. Keep in mind that brake fluid is hydroscopic, so it does absorb water, humidity. And if you look at the fluid, if it's black, that's got a lot of water in it. And it's, you know, with your hydraulic system, electric over hydraulic pump, it's really pretty easy to do. Really all you need to do is, you know, open up a bleeder and pull your breakaway switch. And it's going to cause the pump to turn on and start pumping fluid out the bleeder on your caliper, and you can start adding fluid in the top of the reservoir of the pump. So you can go around to each wheel and go through until you've got clear fluid coming out everywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a car, you have to pump the pedal, and oftentimes you have to have somebody helping you. It turns into a bit of a production, but with these systems, it's a lot more straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we got our brakes done, and we got our tires good with air pressure.
check the date on the tires.
Check the date while we're down there?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. You know, do you remember when you got them? And when you got them, how old were they? You know, you could have bought two-year-old tires. So what you think are perfect may be sort of over the limit at this point, or where over the your comfortable, over your comfort level for tire aging.
Yeah, yeah, because we usually say 5 years and swap them anyway, because usually the tread will still look perfect. But check the tread while you're there, the wear pattern, all that.
Sure, because certainly things can happen. You know, people have hit curbs or stumps and things and bent axles and ended up with bizarre wear patterns. They can also get bizarre wear patterns based on belts that have broken inside the tire, and you know, you end up with a bulge on the tire or something, so you get that wearing more than elsewhere. So a lot of times you can tell just by running your hand around the tire whether it's feeling smooth going in both directions or if it's sort of scalloped. So
okay. So moving on from tires, what's next?
Oh, I guess, you know, you can go to the inside at this point. Maybe start replenishing everything. We always take all the food out. You know, like we might have spaghetti or something sitting in there, but we're not leaving any cans of food because that can freeze and explode, and certainly any kind of perishables. Clean out the fridge. Right. Certainly that's the time to do it. Normally we leave the fridge open all winter just so you're not getting any kind of mold or anything growing in there.
Yeah.
I imagine you know, if you're shutting down for the winter, you probably leave the fridge door open. Or at least you have since you decided to turn it off after what, leaving it running for 8 years or something?
Oh yeah. I left it running on AC for I think it was like 6 years. And then when I had to move it for getting the house painted or something, or when I was polishing it, I don't remember, but it was unplugged for a couple of weeks, and my PG&E went down about $60. That's my power bill. Like, oh my. So then I looked it up and did the math. I'm like, oh my goodness, that thing draws, I forget now, but it was several amps. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, it doesn't seem so bad when you're plugged into the campground power, but when you're paying for it, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, no, I left it. Actually, what I do, I left the door open until it completely dried, and I think since I've been in and out of there, I think it's been closed, but it's been completely dried inside. So, I don't know. You probably should leave it open anyway, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's if you're working in there, it's kind of a pain walking around it all the time. But as soon as you're leaving it for any length of time, just crack it open.
Now, I saw a video, and I looked for it on mine, that some refrigerators, like some of the newer Dometic ones, had a little lever that came out of the handle. And it slid out, and its purpose was just to keep the door propped open from closing all the way. So, I don't know. I've seen it on a video. I didn't see that on my refrigerator. Something you might want to look for.
Yeah, but there's one of our clients actually had come up with a, sort of a creative method to tow with the door cracked open. It was a combination of rubber bands and chunk of wood or something that, I mean, it worked, but it was pretty convoluted.
Yeah, my door actually, because it swings all the way around and it hits my pantry, and I'm not sure how, just over the time, I actually got a ding into my refrigerator door now from that little pantry knob, mm-hmm. little handle, so I got a little nice little ding that matches up with that.
Well, so, maybe you could switch over the opening so it swings the other way.
Yeah, there you go, open it the other way.
You put a ding on the opposite side.
That's right, they can match. It's symmetrical anyway. What about propane lines? Do you do anything with those? Checking those?
I don't.
No?
Perhaps I should be, though.
I probably checked mine since I restored the trailer probably a couple times. You know, I would go out there and pressurize it, turn the tank on, and then I'd go around with my little that soapy solution spray that you can get. And spray all the joints. And, but you know, you really got to watch those for a while. You can't just spray it in for like 2 seconds and walk off. Because it could take like 10 or 20 seconds for that little bubble to start going.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, certainly systems that have been open. We've found a number of trailers, you know, that come in for major work that, you know, the pipes didn't actually split, but the flare nuts cracked.
Yeah, wow.
And, yeah, on the fittings. The fittings would be fine, but the flare nuts would be cracked. So, you know, we're generally replacing all this stuff anyway, but it was really disconcerting when you first look at it. Oh, yeah, you know, like fittings are expensive, therefore we'll save the fittings and the flare nuts and stuff. And we put one on and started to tighten it up. It's just not tightening. And you look at it, and it's got this little hairline crack in it that's not allowing it to tighten. And we started noticing it elsewhere. So, you know what? It's not worth it. Just throw them away. Because one that isn't cracked might be almost cracked.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're going to go that far, do everything, you know?
Yeah.
But
that's when the systems are left open and, I guess, get the, you know, rainwater in or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is just kind of because these are kind of propane lines are kind of exposed because they're run underneath the trailer. And for good reason, we talked about that lots of times. If you're restoring your trailer, you do not want to put them inside the belly pan.
No.
So it's probably a good thing just to go look for little dings, because I think I told you when I was coming out of the field of wrong turns, and the bottom of the trailer hooked on something, and it ripped the bottom storage tube off, and it tweaked my propane line going to the fridge. So you might have tweaked or dinged or dented propane lines you don't even know about.
Yep.
So a good visual inspection is probably a good idea.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
Check your spare as well. Make sure there's air in your spare.
Ah, air in your spare. That's a good idea. Yep. And sometimes those are underneath the front of the trailer.
Yep.
Sometimes they're on the back like mine. Sometimes they're in the bed of your truck.
Yeah, well, mine was in the bed of my truck for a long time, and it was also in the floor of the trailer for a long time until I got very frustrated and ended up making when I was doing all belly pan work, I made a sort of a modern style spare tire A-frame support underneath the front of my trailer, and we include that on most of the restorations we do. Some people don't want it because they're putting on a special cover or something, you know, like a, what they call a continental spare hanging off the back. Now, I guess that's what you've got, but you've got like a vinyl cover for it, I guess?
No, I never did put a cover on it. It just has the aluminum wheel. But no cover on it. I looked for that one. Somebody was reproducing those aluminum ones, but I've never. I think once I saw the price of it, I moved on.
Well, they hadn't reproduced them yet. They're looking to do, you know, a group order, I believe. And from what I understand, they never got enough people to buy into it. And I mean, it was a lot of money. I mean, it was a bold project to undertake because it's, you know, the tooling was the biggest thing. And, you know, to make this thing viable, you really needed an awful lot. And I think he was trying to do it maybe with, I can't remember the exact number, but maybe a 20 or something like that, which was, in theory, should have been relatively easy to find. But still, it ended up being more expensive than a lot of people wanted to spend. I suppose if he went out looking for 50 people, you could get it cheaper, but it'd be a lot tougher finding the 50 people, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, that's been a while, you know, and since then we've got stuff like Kickstarter, where people go and they start their little Kickstarter project. I don't know if you've heard of that site, but somebody might have an idea, like these wheel covers or spare tire covers. Mm-hmm. They go in there, they present the project, sometimes they do a little bit of a video, and then people go in and they back the project by donating, and then they'll have different tiers of donation, and you know, one of those tiers would be to actually, you know, own one of the covers when it's done. So if you're listening out there, why don't you start a Kickstarter project so we can all get our covers?
Well, there you go. You know, it's I like the look of the back end of an Airstream, so I didn't want to clutter it up with a wheel. But hey, you've got one, you're happy.
Yeah, and I just got it because it was rusted on, and there was no way it was coming off.
Oh, everything comes off of the cutoff.
Oh, I know. It can all be done, right, Colin?
That's right. That's right. You can make it look like whatever you want it to.
That's right. So the only other thing I really like to do is, you know, besides kind of going through and cleaning up the trailer, like Colin mentioned, was I actually do like to go through all my appliances and turn them on. So I'll turn on the hot water heater and let it cycle a couple times and check for hot water all the taps and, you know, turn the air conditioner on or turn the fridge on propane and burn the stove. And, you know, I just want to make sure everything comes on like it's supposed to, so I don't have any surprises, because it's one thing I don't like when I'm vacationing is having to work just to get the things to come on.
I seem to remember you've had to do that, though.
I know. I have. Especially with the water heater stuff.
Yeah, on the air conditioner, too. Wasn't that a bit of a production?
Oh, yeah. Climbing on top of the air conditioner in
Florida.
Fort Wilderness. That was fun. But I did learn that if you park the Silverado close enough, you can get into the bed of the truck, get on the roof of the truck, and then get on the roof of the Airstream without any kind of ladder.
Okay, well, and were you able to get down easy enough as well?
It turns out that the shape of the older vintage Airstreams is a lot like a slide.
Yeah.
And you know, the support of the Silverado roof was just fine.
Yeah.
So I don't recommend it. What's that?
You're glad you got off.
Oh, yeah. No, I tried to remember. In fact, I had to block, because of the way it was set, I had to block the door to the trailer, so I had to make sure I had everything I needed, and the family was out doing other activities while I was doing this. But, I tried to make sure I had everything on that I needed when I got up there, and everything done when I got off at the roof. But, I don't recommend that, but it did save the trip, that's for sure. No air conditioning in Florida in July was not a good thing.
No, that would really be uncomfortable.
Yeah, that'd be like, okay, where's the hotel with the big parking lot that lets you park a trailer?
Right. Oh. The other thing we didn't talk about, actually, is making sure your batteries are up to snuff.
Yeah, that's pretty important.
Yeah, like we typically plug the trailer in several times through the winter for, you know, a couple days or whatever, just to make sure that they're staying good. And my last set of batteries, I got, you know, 8 or 9 years out of them, which I couldn't complain about. And oddly enough, one of the three I'm still using in my boat, so hopefully this year it'll still work, and that would make it 13 years old. So
nice.
Yeah, so that's kind of a lucky one. But yeah, because things have warmed up here, I think I'll probably plug the trailer in this weekend and maybe start looking at a few things. But
yeah, mine stays plugged in year round, and I have the tri-state charger, so I just count on it doing its thing, not to cook my batteries. And I have the trimetric meter in there, so I can go and check the status of them, the load, and all that stuff. Mine are 120 or 110 amp hour AGMs, and they're coming up on 8 years old.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But you know, they just have to make it to the next campground where I plug in again. That's all.
Well, yeah, you see, for me, they need to work. Because, you know, I'm in typically state campgrounds where, I don't have any connections, so.
Yep. All right.
They got to go a week or more, and they do.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if mine would, because I got the smoke detector and the LP detector on it, the carbon monoxide detector on it. And what else would be on it? I guess the stereo. Those are all kind of parasitic loads that are always on it. And then the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Would always be on. So I don't think I would go a week. I haven't tried it.
Maybe you should try it.
Yeah. Yeah, just do it outside.
Well, even if you tried it just next in your house, you know, next park next to the house, just.
Yeah.
Yeah. See what it'll do, because that could open up your horizons a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. So, okay. Anything else?
Cleaning everything.
Ah, yes. Keep it clean, like Mom always said.
Yeah. Well, this year I've vowed to take all the curtains out, clean them. And I haven't done that in some years now. They just look great, but I'm sure they need it. And given the fact they're 55 years old, I think I should give them a nice treatment of some form. But the other thing I want to do is go over the inside of the Zolotone. I've sort of done patch cleaning on it here, there, and everywhere over the years, but I want to give it a complete wash everywhere. And it will probably make it significantly brighter than what I've had for some time.
Yeah. I cleaned it when I first redid the trailer. I probably could do it some more. I used the Magic Eraser and all that kind of stuff. And so it's funny, though, because where I took down the cabinet and built the bunk bed behind the old cabinet, it's a lot cleaner than the rest of the trailer where the old cabinet was. Definitely a lot there.
Some of that's to do with UVs and whatnot that's been going in there over the years. So.
Other part of cleaning I like to do is use the beeswax stuff on all the wood treatment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like to put that on all the wood stuff and let it set and then wipe it down about 20 minutes later and get that all nice and shiny and fed. One thing we didn't talk about when we do pack it back the way, I haven't done this and I should. Like every time I think about it, I don't do it, is to put some stuff in the windows to protect the curtains and all that from getting the sun beaten on it.
I do that.
All the time. Yeah, you do that?
Oh, sure. I used to use cardboard, which was certainly fine. But what I've got now is a whole bunch of Reflectix panels that fit in there because they're nice and light and they easy. You can roll them up again, reuse them again the next year. And so they've been all cut to suit each window with sort of notches out around where the cranks are, and that's what holds them in place.
Yeah.
Works well.
Yeah, I did that on my 71 Safari. I had Reflectix that I cut for each of the window. I don't even know where those went now. And I just never did it on the new one, and I'm probably wishing I should have because I had all those new curtains made, and you know, they sit in that. They see that sun all day long on that one side of the trailer.
Oh, yeah, you should be doing it. I know, you know, I think it's certainly the only trailer I've seen of this era with original curtains. So many people are absolutely flabbergasted. But I know that the trailer spent 40 years in a carport. I've had it outside for 13 years now, which it's, you know, hopefully I'll get my barn extension finished this summer, and it will be able to go inside again for the rest of its life. But, yeah, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good thing to do. Okay, I think we got it pretty much covered, unless you can think of something else we need to mention.
Maybe lube the lock. Something like that, you know, the latch mechanism, all those sorts of things. Check all your keys, make sure all those hinges and locks are functioning properly. Check your safety chain. Check all your lights. You know, plug in your whip and make sure everything's doing what it's supposed to do.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Should do that every time. Okay. All right. I think that should cover it. Get that trailer, get some spring cleaning going, get it ready to go, and because camping season will be here before you know it.
That's right. We're going to do a Lumapalooza, but I'm hoping to do something before that as well, so should be good.
Well, I'm scheduled in 2 weeks to go to the Northern California Forums rally.
Good.
So I don't know. Maybe it's going to be the next show. Maybe we might delay the show a day and record it live from the rally. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out.
Yeah, because you haven't done that yet, have you?
No, I haven't done that yet.
Because that may be a technological leap for you.
That's right.
Can you bring some studio stuff down and record this somehow or other?
Yeah, I think so. I got my laptop here. I got a microphone I could use. I could probably rig something up if I get the energy between now and then. And then, because it's going to be, I'll be driving down there on a Friday. It's Easter weekend, so I may just be spending the Friday night and come back late Saturday. We'll have to see how the schedule goes, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'd be good. And we can do a live one there.
No, so, that'd be good.
Yep. I better get the chlorine ready.
That's right. Bleach.
The bleach. Okay. All right, everybody. Get your trailers ready to go. And until next time, we'll see you down the road.
Good night, all.
Cool kids go for.